Well, for the first time ever, we are coming your way live from Hungary on the Line of Fire, and it is especially appropriate that it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday from Hungary. Stay tuned, I'll tell you why.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, as I speak these words, we are just making history now. We've broadcast live from Singapore, live from Hong Kong, live from India, live from Italy, live from Israel, live from all over America, other countries as well. But this is my first time ever in the country of Hungary, a country 10 million strong. And that's why it's my first time broadcasting live from Hungary. And I kid you not, this is the perfect day to be broadcasting. I mean, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday from this church, from this building. And I'll tell you why in a moment. Welcome, welcome to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thank you so much for joining us. We've got our team ready, steady, Joey, Betsy, Matt, and other supporters helping with the broadcast, all ready to roll. And I can take your calls. I can take your live calls. So every call today, you are making history together. As long as it's related to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday topic, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Any question you have, Israel-related question, Jewish-related question, Hebrew-related question, Messianic prophecy question, Jewish objection to Jesus question, Judaism question, and even some that relate to Islam in the Middle East, we'll even take those. But your calls are warmly welcome, 866-34-TRUTH. And your calls will also help energize me through the broadcast. So you heard me yesterday on the air and finished the broadcast, Eastern Standard Time, 4 in the afternoon. Had a run over to my mom's house. She's 92 years old, to her apartment. Deliver her laundry for her, hang some things up, and say, hey, Mom, I don't have time to stay and play cards when I get back, because I've got like a day and a half after Hungary before my next trip. I said, we'll play a marathon instead of best of five. We'll play best of seven. It's fine with her. She went back to doing her crossword puzzles. Shot home quick. I had to go to the store first, then got home. Nancy had food ready for me. I ate, finished packing with some of the special foods I got to travel with because of my new lifestyle of eating super healthily. Got packed up, went to the airport with Matt, my faithful producer who helps in many other ways. And then from the time I left the house to the time I arrived here, three different flights traveling through the night was, I don't know, 18 hours and change. So you were home in your comfortable beds, having a wonderful time. I was flying, traveling, trying to catch some sleep on the flights. Got to the airport just about 3 hours ago now, and went straight over to the church facilities. I want you to understand this, friends. Hungary is a country of 10 million people. This church, Faith Church, has a membership of 70,000, okay? They can fit over 10,000 people into their main facility at any time. They have schools for children, primary, secondary schools with 5,000 students all over the nation. If you computed those terms in American terms, it would be a church of more than 2 million people. And they have an amazing heart for Israel. Even before the pastor, Sandor Nemeth, was saved, he had a heart for Israel. And while he was a Catholic doing Catholic studies, he was also in a school for rabbis wanting to do Jewish studies before he was even born again. So I want to tell you something about that, because I'm going to be speaking from a pulpit over this weekend where people like Elie Wiesel and Natan Sharansky have spoken. It's really unique, and they love Jesus, and they're hungry for the things of God. A whole lot of news to cover. How has Israel reacted to the Republican landslide? We'll talk about that and your calls, 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast live from Hungary. A bunch of news items I do want to talk to you about. Want to take your calls. Again, any Israel-related subject, Jewish-related question, Hebrew question. Every call today is historic because you'll be part of our first ever broadcast on The Line of Fire live from Hungary. I must say this is easier than Singapore. Singapore was 12 hours time difference, so that meant I'd speak at night, go back to my hotel room, rest for a couple hours, get up and do radio from 2 to 4 in the morning, and try to go back to sleep for a few hours before speaking again the next morning. Here, it's a 6-hour difference, so that means 2 o'clock New York time, 8 o'clock in the evening, Hungary time. I can handle that better. All right. I have a guest sitting here with me who greeted me at the airport and who will be translating for me, but I'm going to ask him to pronounce his name for us.
Hello, my name is Csaba Suryanyi.
Okay, Csaba. And Csaba, why don't you just greet our listeners in Hungarian? Perhaps we have some Hungarian listeners right now.
Szeretettel üdvözlök minden kedves hallgatót, hogyha valaki tud magyarul a hallgatóság közül, remélem, hogy a magyar köszöntés felfrissíti.
All right, I did not understand a syllable of that whatsoever. All right, one of the things that struck me, and I've heard about Faith Church through the years, and Pastor Chandra and I connected a little bit years back, but this is our first time really being here with you in Hungary and speaking at the church. You have had a tremendous heart for Israel, standing with Israel, standing against anti-Semitism, standing against anti-Zionism in history. Before the Holocaust, there were, what, a million Jews in Hungary? Do you know what
almost. It is estimated 800,000.
Okay, 800,000. And then in a very short period of time, many were killed in the Holocaust.
Yes, about 600,000 of them were killed.
Oh, so it happened, what, within a year?
Less than a year, half a year maybe.
And when warnings came, someone escaped from a camp and said it's an extermination camp, people didn't take it seriously?
You know, this was a different world. They didn't have TV, they didn't have radio in a way like we have it today. So it was unbelievable for most people.
It seemed impossible.
It seemed impossible.
Yeah,
right.
And then it happened so quickly before you knew it was happening.
Yes.
All right, and Pastor Chandra was telling me that the Hungarian Jews were influential, many of them affluent, many of them handling matters for the government, and so these were people that were higher up, and still they got taken out.
Yes, without exceptions.
Extraordinary. All right, so Pastor Chandra is a Catholic many years ago. He's studying Catholic studies, but he also is drawn to Jewish studies and starts to study in a school for the training of rabbis.
Yes.
So this is before he even had a real relationship with the Lord. And he said before that the Jewish community was suspicious of him for about 30 years.
Yes.
But he understood it because of the history.
Yes, maybe he brought this sympathy for Jewish affairs from his family, and probably this is part of his calling. And this suspicion that you mentioned, I think this is quite general.
Yeah, and it would be understood, especially with World War II. And the question is, you know, where were all the Christians? If there's so many Christians in these countries, where were they? And why were some of them working in complicity with the Nazis? So as he really comes to know the Lord and God works deeply in his heart, the Israel burden has always been there. How did he get connected to the Israeli leaders? I mean, and what relationship does your church have to the Israeli government?
Of course, this did not happen just overnight. I wasn't there at the beginnings, but to my information, this all got started with during communism, with the underground movement against the government. And these circles were influenced by Pastor Chandra and others to try to establish diplomatic relationships with Israel, the state of Israel, because Hungary belonged to the Soviet bloc, you know.
Mm. So the church was first born just as a Catholic charismatic prayer meeting, and then evolved from that into a church being led by Pastor Chandra. That was under communism.
Yes.
So he was followed by secret police for, what, 10 years?
More than 10 years.
More than 10 years. But even then, he was trying to work for Hungary to stand with Israel.
Yes, it was, you know, part of the underground political movement, which was a part of survival. And it had chapters about Israel, too.
Amazing. And now, with these many years that have gone by, and with Pastor Sándor and the church really proving themselves to the Jewish people and to the people of Israel, you've had folks like Eli Wiesel here. Mm-hmm. You've had Natan Sharansky. Mm-hmm. Have you had other Knesset members, parliamentary members here?
Oh, yes. This year we've had Uzi Landau, a touristic minister, and we also had Ronald Lauder, president of Jewish World Congress. So we've had many guests.
And why do they come here? What draws them to Faith Church in Hungary?
This is quite new, I think, to build bridges between Christianity and the Jewish people. And we invite those people who want to be part of this bridge, and they come.
All right. During Israel's war on Gaza, war on Hamas in Gaza, there were lots of media reports that we were getting in America about the Islamic protests in different cities, in Germany, in France, in England, protests against Israel, demonizing Israel as these horrific murderers and ignoring the fact that they were fighting against Islamic terrorism. And there were some that were praising Hitler. I mean, even in European countries, I mean, this is how despicable it was. I did not hear the media reports about what happened in Hungary. I was not aware of this. If the reports came out, I missed them, but they certainly were not major news. And Matt, I'm wondering if you saw this. Tell our listeners what happened in Hungary with protests during the war.
Unfortunately, everybody knows the reasons why it did not come through on the media. But in Eastern Europe, especially in Hungary, it was the reverse. We've had minor demonstrations against Israel and huge demonstrations for Israel.
All right. Friends, are you listening? We didn't hear that. I certainly didn't hear that. Small demonstrations against Israel. A few hundred, and huge demonstrations for Israel.
Many thousand people.
In Hungary.
In Hungary.
And some other countries as well.
Yes, we know about Czech Republic, Slovakia, and other countries.
All right. Why do these countries have a better understanding of what's happening than so many countries around the world?
I think it has many reasons, historical reasons too. And this is, I think, the influence of Christianity.
Mm. Friends, that is encouraging to hear, and it's something that we did not hear reported in the news. Now, the Israelis that come here, the Jewish leaders that come here, they know you're Christians.
Of course.
And that you believe that Jesus is the way to God. They understand that, but they also know that you genuinely stand with Israel, whether Israel believes or not. Why, if I just talk to someone in the church, or I talk to you, not the senior pastor, and I say, well, why is this so important? Why does this matter to God? Why should Christians even care about this? What would you say?
Because the gospel came through Israel. The word of God came through Israel. The covenants came through Israel. And God has not finished with Israel. In the future, God will insert Israel into the new covenant. And the future is a relationship between God and Israel and God and the church.
Mm. All right. The government of Hungary right now, obviously an influential church like this, a church this large, and Pastor Sándor being respected, known to different leaders in the country. Where is the government right now in terms of Israel?
Maybe the best way to put it, the government is on the way. Because Hungary has different traditions, and in the second part of the 20th century, the anti-Israeli traditions got stronger. But now this government, I think I can sense that changed quite much, and they cannot be said pro-Israeli, but they are not against Israel anymore.
Yeah. Do you see that trend elsewhere in Europe, Eastern or Central Europe?
I think this is due to lobby activities and many other activities that church people do. I can see some changes like that.
Yeah, friends, pray for these nations, and especially as they stand with Israel. That, and again, that doesn't mean bashing Palestinians or hating Muslims. It means standing for righteousness and also recognizing God's covenant promises. Pray that God would really, in a tangible way, let these nations know that his favor is on them as they do that. It's a great honor to be with you this weekend, and I'm looking forward to amazing meetings. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That music tells you it is thoroughly Jewish Thursday, even though I am in Hungary. But as I said at the top of the broadcast, what a perfect place for me to be doing a thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. Listen, I have spoken in some of the most prestigious pulpits around the world over the years, in America and around the world. Every time I stand to speak the word of God, it's a tremendous honor. I'm simply saying I have been in places where it's an even more exceptional honor because of the reach that this group may have, or because of those that have been at that pulpit before me. I have never spoken from a pulpit at a church where also Elie Wiesel spoke, where other Israeli leaders that have been to this church have been, along with the Christian leaders that have spoken. So it's just striking to see their tremendous heart for Israel. Here I am, and it works out thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 3 hours after I arrive, after 18 hours of travel. Here we are broadcasting live. So any Jewish-related question you have, Hebrew question, theological question relating to the Old Testament, anything having to do with what's going on in the Middle East today, if you really question whether the church is truly called to stand with Israel, I will gladly take your calls. And again, every call today is historic. So don't think, well, I don't want to call because I don't have a historic question. I just have, no, basic questions are fine. We make history by just doing the broadcast. Okay, what's the view from Israel about the Republican landslide? This article in Haaretz, which is a major Israeli newspaper, very liberal-leaning, by the way, here's a summary right leading up to the election results being announced. And it says, Netanyahu rooting for Republicans in U.S. midterm elections. This is a summary put out by Barry and Batya Siegel. The lights were expected to be on very late Tuesday night in the prime minister's office, with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu glued to Fox News as he awaited a call from Ambassador to Washington Ron Dermer about the results of the midterm U.S. congressional elections. It's no secret that Netanyahu and his aides have been praying for control of the U.S. Senate to fall to the Republicans, who already hold a majority of the House of Representatives. Of course, that happened in a shocking, overwhelming way. Why? Why would Prime Minister Netanyahu want the Senate to be controlled by Republicans? Well, there's tremendous distrust right now, a very fractured relationship between President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu. And according to this report, Netanyahu is convinced that Obama will have limited room to maneuver following a Republican victory. And there's great concern in Israel that America will make some type of deal with Iran, that America will make a deal with Iran that could prove fatal to many in Israel. So as the report continues, Netanyahu believes a Republican victory could help him thwart what Obama and his people have declared is the most important foreign policy issue during his second term as president, a historic agreement with Iran on its nuclear program. The congressional elections are taking place only 3 weeks before the end of the period allowed for negotiations between Iran and the six world powers, and 5 days before the summit meeting of U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, and then Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif and EU Foreign Policy Chief Catherine Ashton. Immediately after the elections, particularly if the Republicans do well, which they did, even beyond what anyone was predicting, Netanyahu is expected to launch a major effort to incite Congress against any deal at all with Iran. You say, but doesn't he want peace? Doesn't he prefer peace to war? Yes, absolutely. But he does not trust Iran. When you have rhetoric from the leaders of Iran, and when you have leaders in Iran saying that Israel, to paraphrase, is a parasite that needs to be wiped out, when you have Jerusalem Day demonstrations in Iran with hundreds of thousands, if not millions, chanting death to Israel, also death to America, and burning Israeli flags and American flags, and now the potential of nuclear armaments, you say, but it's not armament. No, no, no. If they can finish their nuclear program, they will be able to threaten Israel with nuclear war. And an anonymous source in the Obama administration has said that Netanyahu's a coward, even used profanity to describe him, and he's not going to do this, he's not going to attack Iran. This is a volatile situation. Listen, I do not expect a nuclear war against Israel. I don't expect it. Can I rule it out prophetically? No, I can't. Can you rule out prophetically that it won't happen to America? No, I can't. However, you must use wisdom. And when you have someone who has said the things that the Iranian leaders have said in recent years, and you know the depth of hostility that radical Islam has towards Israel, for sure, without a doubt, Israel is wise in saying, do not let them get nuclear power. You say Israel has nuclear power. Israel's not threatening to wipe out other nations because it hates them and doesn't believe they have a right to exist. Israel's not doing that. You say you're overly demonizing Iran. Not everyone in Iran feels like this, and I'm sure they're moderates, and I'm sure that there are many who would not want to launch a nuclear war because they know that the retaliation would be far more severe than whatever they bring. But you've got to be pragmatic if you are Israel being threatened by these other neighbors. So and when I was in Israel, I was struck by the degree of mistrust towards President Obama. That doesn't make me feel good. I'm an American as well as a Jewish follower of Jesus. And I would love for the Israelis to feel confident in our national leadership. But that has not been the case with President Obama. So just giving you the background on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-348-7884. Not directly relating to Israel and the Jewish people, but I want to mention this briefly. If you go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, click on latest article. You'll see an article that I posted last night called Bill Maher and Free Speech at Berkeley. And I mentioned how Bill Maher's Christianity bashing would not stir up controversy at Berkeley, but his Islamic bashing has stirred up controversy. There's been a petition launched by Islamic leaders on the campus saying that Maher should not be the commencement speaker. I think I mistakenly referenced it would have been May when I brought it up the other day, but it's actually the commencement speaker that'll be coming up the end of this year, so it's coming up shortly. And, you know, his attacks on religion are unacceptable, etc. Well, the thing that's interesting is that when you go to the petition, there's general attacks on religion, then attacks on Islam. It doesn't mention his attacks on Christianity. So these are offended Muslim students that have a right to be offended? Sure, absolutely. But why not say we're offended Muslim students and Bill Maher is an issue to us because of that? Hey, the world celebrates him when he bashes Christianity. When he bashes Islam, he gets attacked. Interesting, isn't it? So read the article. And be sure to go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Askdrbrown.org. Check out this week's special offer. It's rich, it's important, a super resource that will bless you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown coming your way live from Hungary. Live from Hungary, first time ever. And looking forward to meetings tomorrow night, Saturday night, Sunday morning. Not only getting to speak to tens of thousands of people face to face, but by God's grace, also getting to speak to the nation via television. The church here owns a liberal TV show, fell in their hands. They have certain minimum moral requirements that the shows cannot cross certain lines, the interviews, the discussion, other things like that. But otherwise have all the debate discussion you want, and then the church broadcasts here as well, so it's a great way for them to speak to the nation, and it's a privilege to do so here. 866-348-7884. Okay, I was just tweeting out a reminder of to check out my latest article, the one I just mentioned on Bill Maher and free speech. And while at Twitter, I noticed there was a question specially submitted to me for Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Normally I wouldn't spot these, but Josh, it's your lucky day. Dr. Brown, if Israel is the servant, Isaiah 41:9, and the light to the nations, Isaiah 42:6, and Messiah is the righteous servant, Isaiah 52:13, and the light to the nations, Luke 2:32, then how is it that Jesus calls his disciples the light of the world, Matthew 5:14? So let me start there and answer it. First, he was talking to his Jewish people, and it is Israel's calling to be a light to the nations. Israel is called to be a light to the nations. Who fulfills the destiny of Israel? Messiah. Messiah, the ideal Israelite. Messiah, the one who fulfills the destiny of the Jewish people as a Jew himself. All right? So, first answer to the question is, he's talking to his Jewish disciples. So naturally, he tells them that they're the light of the world. Josh continues with his question. Further, as a Gentile disciple of Jesus who's been grafted into the commonwealth of Israel, am I too part of that light-bearing witness? Absolutely. You get to share in many of the things that Israel is called to do, and the rest of the New Testament says that. In Ephesians 5, there's an explicit calling to all believers to be light, to expose darkness, to walk in goodness and truth. Now, the next question, if so, doesn't that mean that all of us who call Abraham father are part of the ecclesia, kahal of believing Israel? No. Why would that be the case? Why would that be the deduction? If you have now been grafted in to the larger commonwealth of Israel, so Israel and the nations that join with it, that wouldn't make you believing Israel, but now you share the same destiny. Let's just say that America was fighting against radical Islam, and then another nation joined us in the battle, they would not become America, but they'd be part of the coalition fighting against radical Islam. So all believers now share in this larger calling without Gentiles becoming Israel, without Israel becoming Gentiles. Next question, if that's true, then isn't it also true that the church of believing Israel have always been one? No. The church, the ecclesia, the congregation, is saved Jews and saved Gentiles. Much of Israel today is not part of the church, just as much of the Gentile world is not part of the church. So Israel in the Old Testament was called the congregation, the Edah, the Kahal, which sometimes would be translated as ecclesia in Greek. But now specifically the ecclesia is saved Jews, saved Gentiles in one family. So a couple more questions that Josh posted. But I'll just finish him off. If so, then I agree with you. Supersessionism is indeed false. Why? Because the church was present in the Old Testament. The ecclesia cannot replace the kahal if the ecclesia and the kahal are the church of Israel. That's not a correct deduction, though. I understand the point, but it's not a correct deduction. Nowhere. I'll repeat. Nowhere. Let me say it again. Nowhere does the New Testament ever call saved Gentiles Israel. Nowhere. Never. Doesn't happen.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, Michael Brown coming your way live from Hungary for the first time in my life. Being in Hungary, I've been overseas, I don't know, 130, 140 trips. Been to Europe dozens and dozens and dozens of times, but my first time in Hungary, you say, what's it like? I can't tell you yet. I can't tell you. I arrived, it was dark. We have not gone into the main city yet. We're on the outskirts of the city where the large facilities for Faith Church are, and I'm broadcasting from their facilities. But God willing, I will get a nice view of Budapest, and I hear it's a beautiful city, and get to tell you a little bit more about Hungary while I'm here. And yeah, here's an article. I don't remember seeing this. I'm sure I didn't see it initially. I missed it. July 28th of this year, thousands of Hungarians rally in solidarity with Israel. It was in a historic synagogue where thousands of Hungarians came to stand with Israel and to say that Israel is on the right side of this war against terror, war against Hamas. And the pastor of this church, Faith Church, Chandra Nemeth, was the one who helped organize this and get that tremendous turnout there. All right, let me finish answering this theological question. And it's asking about the relationship between the church and Israel and so-called supersessionism or replacement theology, that the church supersedes Israel in God's purposes, or that the church replaces Israel. So Josh continues with his question. Isn't it also accurate to conclude that the church, which includes, Jews and Gentiles today, was the desire of God for Israel in the Old Testament, but only fulfilled by Jesus and the ministry of his apostles in the New Testament? No. No, I wouldn't agree with that. God's desire in the Old Testament was for Israel to be a separated nation. Gentiles could join the community of Israel. You could have a Ruth that could convert or be part of the congregation of Israel. You read about people converting to Judaism in the book of Esther as a result of Haman's failed attempt to wipe out the Jews. However, it was God's purpose for Israel to be Israel, as a distinct nation and people, through whom the Messiah could come. And then through the Messiah, he would now build a community of saved Jews and saved Gentiles, of Jews and Gentiles who knew the living God. You say, okay, well then, doesn't that mean that fulfillment theology is true, that all promises to Israel are fulfilled through Jesus? No, doesn't mean that at all. Because God has still given promises to Israel, even in Israel's unbelief. That's why we're still here. That's why we've been scattered and yet regathered. Why? Because God has made promises. That's why he brought us back to the land, not because of our obedience or our repentance, but because of his promises. The error of fulfillment theology is it does not recognize that the national promises to Israel continue. That is super major and super important. 866-34-TRUTH. Joey, let's go to clip number six. Let's catch up with some Israel-related news issues. This is CNN. It's from about 2 weeks ago, but I missed this happening as well. And event that took place, Ferguson, Missouri, October 20th. I do remember seeing this, but didn't report on it. Clip number six from CNN.
They ain't gonna never say the truth. They got their own narrative, and they get paid by Zionists. They're an APEC-run agency. They are ran by, I know what's up, y'all. That's all Israelis, cuz. You know what I'm saying? They're all run by Israel, so they all gotta go. You're all run by Zionists.
Yeah, now this was live TV. I remember watching part of that, but just never got around to reporting it and discussing it. I'm only laughing because CNN did not intend to have that on live TV, that everything is controlled by the Zionists. Tell you what. Would you like to call in and make your case I'll give you a couple minutes of airtime to make your case that Jews control the world. Oh, maybe you honestly believe that. I had a caller the other day and said one reason it doesn't, that we shouldn't vote, makes no sense voting, is because Illuminati control the world. And he said, so I asked him, I said, that's your point, that Illuminati control the world, and therefore we shouldn't bother to vote because Illuminati control what's going to happen in the world. And he said, yes, but no one ever listens to it because they just ridicule it. I said, all right, then. Obviously, I don't believe that for a split second, but fine. I said, great, then let's do our investigation and see. Well, I'm going to give you an opportunity. Come on. Don't just blast me privately and send nasty emails or post profane things on YouTube attacking Israel, tweeting out ugly messages. Why not make your case? Give it your best shot. Why you believe that Jews control the world? Why you believe that Jews control all the money in the world? The banks, the Jews control the media. Now, I have no issue with saying that the Jewish people have a disproportionate influence for good or for bad. I have no issue with that whatsoever. I believe that God put it into the Jewish people to be world changers and to be world influencers. And it's just beyond the good education that we've had or the traditional studies and how we've learned educational principles there and then carried them into the secular world. It goes beyond that. The influence remains disproportionate for good or for bad. So on the one hand, you have the prophets of Israel, you have the apostles, you have the Messiah himself, all Jews / Israelites, and then you have the Karl Marxes of the world, both of whose parents came from a line of rabbis and then converted, perhaps an outward conversion to Christianity. That's how Karl Marx was raised. Yeah, you have people like that. To this day, you have influential people in the media, influential people in politics, influential people in banking who are Jews. Yes, a disproportionate influence for good or for bad, which is a far cry from saying that Jews control the media and that Jews control the world banks, etc. And if that was true, why, pray tell, is there so much Jewish suffering? And why, pray tell, is there so much Jewish hatred, even in the media? Yeah, fair questions to ask, don't you think? 866-34-TRUTH. Let me catch up on a little bit more news here. Oh, boy, there are a whole bunch of things. My friends Eddie and Jackie Santoro, writing from Israel, talking about the exploding violence. Israel could be on the edge of another major intifada. There is tremendous incitement. You don't need Hamas to be doing it. Tremendous incitement from the Palestinian Authority. Another act of a terrorist traffic attack in Israel. And Eddie and Jackie report, hate-crazed Islamic terrorists who love killing Israelis more than they love their own lives, doing everything and anything to terrorize the residents of Jerusalem. First Intifada, the Palestinian uprising, was from 1987 to 1991. Second Intifada, the years 2000 to 2005. Eddie and Jackie note, during that time, thousands of innocent Israelis and Palestinians were killed and wounded. We remember all too well the suicide bombers exploding themselves in crowded buses, shopping malls, restaurants, and almost anywhere Israeli civilians gathered. Although the Intifada ended, individual terrorist incidences have continued to occur at different times and places. By the way, that's a major reason that Israel put up the security barrier. And since then, these murderous terrorist attacks have gone down about 99%. You're going to fault them because it divides certain areas? Are you going to fault them because here and there it goes slightly off other borders? Well, Israel's just a land grab. If it was a land grab, you'd do things very differently than this. It is a protection grab. It is trying to keep murderers out. It boggles my mind that well-meaning Christians, caring Christians, who genuinely care about people and want to see people experience God's love and want to see justice. It boggles my mind that they could attack Israel for the security barrier, which is, what, 97% fence and 3% wall, that they could attack Israel over this. They could demonize Israel over this. They could make Israel into the bad guy and say it's an apartheid wall when it is keeping murderers out. And where it's a wall, it's to keep snipers out on top of it. And it has been highly successful. If there weren't murderers that were making their way into Israel to kill Israeli men, women, and children, if there weren't murderers doing it, if they weren't incited by radical Islamic leaders, they didn't have cooperation of elements of the government, Palestinian leadership, Israel wouldn't have had to put the fence up. I didn't plan to talk about that, but I did. I'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That Middle Eastern music tells you it is thoroughly Jewish Thursday. It's an article from David Turner in the Jerusalem Post 3 days ago now. November 3rd, the Jewish problem from anti-Judaism to anti-Semitism. It starts off saying this, Christian insecurity, if the church was the new Israel, for what purpose did national Israel exist? This is part of the wrong theology that has opened up the floodgates to persecution of Jewish people and Jewish suffering through the centuries. Turner says Christian insecurity stands on three legs. One, the problem of Jewish survival is challenged to Christian claims as inheritor of God's covenant. You see, Israel hasn't gone away. The Jewish people haven't disappeared. I saw someone posting the other day and just saying, well, that's it. The Jewish people rejected Jesus. It's over for them. God cast them off forever. God cast them off and he's done with them. Well, we're still here. Not only have we endured suffering and been preserved, but we have been regathered, and now the state of Israel has 6 million Jews living in it. Who did that? God did. Well, what about our theology? Well, better re-examine the theology. Number two, second leg on which Christian insecurity stands, the problem of the second coming, several times predicted, each time deferred by Paul. Now, again, this is David Turner's perspective. That's a terribly misleading statement, each time deferred by Paul. Quite the contrary. There would have been expectation in some of Paul's letters that Jesus was returning in their lifetimes, and he dies longing for the appearing of the Lord when he knows he's going to be martyred in 2 Timothy, the 4th chapter. But you could turn the argument around and say, well, if Jesus is the Messiah, how come there still isn't peace on earth? And then he says the problem of history, that three centuries of intense search by leading Christian scholars have failed to uncover any evidence for Jesus as described in the Gospels, man, or mission. What kind of nonsense is that? What kind of nonsense is that? Boy, I agreed with his first point, and boy, these other points, second is misworded, and the third is completely off. I mean, more and more top scholars keep providing evidence for the historicity of the Gospels and the rightness of these claims. All right, so back to Jerusalem. I got myself sidetracked looking at that article over the break. Back to Jerusalem. A right-wing rabbi, Yehuda Glick, an American Israeli, was shot by a Palestinian terrorist and seriously wounded. And that has created all kinds of havoc. There have been concerns that America has not strongly enough condemned the attack. There are uprisings in the Temple Mount area when Israel restricts access to any group of people because of potential danger. That creates more religious strife. And again, there is a real possibility that things will get incited in an ugly, ugly way. And then again, this just makes it harder for Israel to to deal with the Palestinians because of the ongoing violent attacks. So this is now 2 days ago. Yesterday afternoon, Ibrahim Al-Akari, a 48-year-old father of five, became a murderer when he plowed his van into one of the light rail stations filled with pedestrians. One Druze resident of Jerusalem, so it's non-Jew, died, and 11 other Israelis were wounded, three critically. This attack was a copy of an event that occurred just last week in which a three-month-old baby, American-Israeli baby, lost her life as a result of vehicle terror attack at another light rail station. Both terrorist drivers were killed by security forces. Last night, so the day before, just a few hours after the pedestrian attack, three soldiers standing on the side of a road were run down by another terrorist driver. All three were wounded seriously. This time, the alleged driver surrendered to security forces in the midst of a massive manhunt. In all of these incidences, the terrorist murders were immediately exalted as martyrs and heroes by the Palestinian Authority and Hamas. I'm just telling you the truth, friends. I'm just telling you the truth. You say, but what about the Palestinian Christians? I don't think the Palestinian Christians, if they're true Christians, I don't think for a split second that they are celebrating as martyrs and heroes these suicide drivers. However, they are not the voice of the nation. They are a tiny minority, and they cannot speak up freely and say everything that they could say because of radical Islam and because of the environment in which they live. Where do Christians have freedom? Where do Christians have freedom to practice their faith? Where does someone have freedom to convert from Islam to becoming a follower of Jesus in the Middle East? Is it in Saudi Arabia? Is it in Gaza? Is it in Yemen? Shall we go down the list? Where do they have complete freedom? Israel? Israel? Oh, Israel has proselytizing laws that you can't try to proselytize a minor. And if you have religious meetings, you're inviting a minor, you have to get parental permission. Yeah, that's an Israeli law. But if you're a 30-year-old Muslim, you convert to Islam, it would be illegal in Israel for your family to try to do you harm. And if you're a Christian and you want to have prayer meetings all night at your church, and if you want to share the gospel with friends in a park and talk about Jesus, you can go ahead and do that. Anyway, all that to say, you have a terrorist attack on Israel. Now terrorist drivers. I mean, how are you going to deal with that? Now yet another security issue. And now Israel may have to come up with more restrictions because of that. It's this vicious cycle, you see. And how do these terrorist drivers get branded? People who kill a three-month-old baby, people who drive into a crowd and kill a Druze, a non-Jew, and injure others, some seriously, trying to kill more? You say that person is a terrorist. That person is a murderer. That person should be condemned. No, they are celebrated as martyrs and heroes by the Palestinian Authority and by Hamas. That's how deep the differences are. That's why we need to pray for God's intervention. That's why we need to pray for the salvation of these radical Muslims. That's why we need to pray for God's hand on Israel. And that's why we need to pray for the salvation of the Jewish people. But you better believe, when it comes to righteousness, friends, I want to urge you, when it comes to righteousness, stand with Israel in the conflict. And when Israel does wrong, with respect, urge them to do right. But I'm telling you, if there is an overall right and wrong in the conflict, and there is, the overall right is on the side of Israel. Why not stand with us? Why not hold my hands up here in Hungary? Why not hold my hands up by becoming a torchbearer, a monthly supporter? My thank you gift to you will be a $30 Tree of Life version of the Bible, the first ever joint work of scholarship with Messianic Jewish and Christian scholars working together to produce a fresh new translation. Your gift of $30 or more per month, so a dollar a day set aside, will help us reach more and more Jewish people with the gospel and speak to the church about Israel. Call 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, we continue to see anti-Semitism raise its head, and anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism all too often walk hand in hand. Well, for the first time ever, we are coming your way live from Hungary on the Line of Fire, and it is especially appropriate that it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday from Hungary. Stay tuned, I'll tell you why.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, Michael Brown coming away live from Hungary. I haven't really gotten to see anything yet. I got into the airport, after you heard me sign off on the radio, ran a few errands, got home, had a quick meal, said goodbye to my beautiful bride of 38 plus years, and then headed to the airport. My faithful producer, Matt, who also does my airport runs, gives us more time to strategize and brainstorm. Also, got to the airport, and from the time I left my house to getting to Budapest, about 18 hours, came straight over to the church facilities here at Faith Church in Hungary with a membership of 70,000 people in a country of 10 million. If you put that in American terms, that would be a church of 2 million, over 2 million people, if you can imagine that. And they have a great heart for Israel, as I mentioned in the first hour. So tried to sleep a little on the plane flying over, and by God's grace, doing well. And coming away live from Hungary. So once I get to see some of the city, I've been in the outskirts and it's dark. Once I get to see more of the city, I'll give you my report on Budapest, which I understand is a beautiful city. And again, this is my first time in Hungary. Any Jewish-related questions you have, Israel-related, Hebrew-related, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. We're also going to do a giveaway. We're going to do a little trivia to have a little fun here from Hungary on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. But check out this news report. I mentioned it in passing in the first hour, but I did not know about this. Somehow I missed it. But while there were protests in different countries around the world bashing Israel during Israel's war with Hamas a few months back, in Hungary, check this out. Check this out. Thousands, some reports said tens of thousands, thousands of Hungarians gathered July 28th, this is a few days before it, Sunday in Budapest, prestigious, I don't know how to pronounce this, Dohany Street Synagogue, to show solidarity with Israel and condemn the terror attacks against the Jewish state. Ilan Mor, Israel's ambassador to Hungary, told the rally that Israel is at war against terror and not Islam or the Palestinian people. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Shandor Nemeth, senior pastor of Faith Church, that's where I am. That's where I'm speaking this weekend. In fact, if you go to Facebook, you'll see a great picture. I mean, the main sanctuary, what they seat about 10,000 people, something like that. Check out the picture I posted on Facebook of Natan Sharansky speaking here. The building you see there, that's where I'll be speaking, God willing, tomorrow night, Saturday night, Sunday morning. Eli Wiesel has spoken there. Other Israeli leaders have spoken there. Israeli parliament, Knesset members have spoken there. But here's what the article says, and this is ynetnews.com. Shandor Nemeth, senior pastor of Faith Church, underlined that Israel stands on the good side in this conflict. He also criticized the radical Hungarian nationalist Jobbik Party and its leader, I'm not going to pronounce the name, who had slammed the Jewish state and called for boycott of Israeli products. Both Nemeth and Ilan Mor received standing ovations. The well-attended demonstration was organized by the Faith Church. That's where I am here. And the Federation of Hungarian Jewish Communities, with many in attendance waving Israeli and Hungarian flags. Others had banners condemning the continuous rocket attacks against Israel and denouncing Hamas terrorism. The demonstration began after a slight delay due to lack of sufficient space for all of the attendees in the 3,000 street synagogue. Many demonstrators were forced to remain outside and follow the speeches from a screen erected for the occasion. The only disturbance involved a group of about a dozen men dressed in black who held up a banner reading "Murderers." Friends, this is significant. And among the keynote speakers was, I'm not going to pronounce the name, who conveyed a message of firm support for Israel. "We show our solidarity with Israel in peace. We denounce every form of fundamentalism. We condemn the terrorizing of people and countries." That's significant. What a privilege. What a privilege to be here. I'll be right back.
Fire we please, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, coming your way live from Hungary. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, same number as always. We've got our high-tech portable radio equipment. They've put me in this, I guess it's like a boardroom, just to have these major meetings. I mean, this massive table with, I don't know, maybe 20, maybe this is where the 24 elders, some table like this in heaven. I mean, this is nice. And anyway, I'm all set up here, about four times more space than my normal studio, which is about to be radically revamped with TV equipment we're putting out. I can't wait to share more with you about that. All right, to the phones for the very first time from Hungary, Brian in Snellville, Georgia. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, brother. How are you, sir?
Doing well, thank you.
All right. I have celebrated Passover for the past 3 years, and it just baffles me how a lot of the Jewish eyes haven't been opened, because you can see Messiah in every part of it. But my question is did Jesus actually celebrate the same Passover that we do with the three pieces of matzah, and one's taken away and hidden, and then found, and then the Elijah seat and all that? And if so, if that is not actually in the Torah, then where did that custom come from? And it has to be from Holy Spirit. So can you explain that for me?
Yes, sir. Okay, first thing, there is no evidence whatsoever that the Passover, with all of its rites and rituals that is practiced by traditional Jews around the world today and has been for many centuries, that same ceremony existed in Jesus' day. Okay. Everything we can tell is a lot of that comes after. Now, there were certain things that did exist, and the drinking of the glasses of wine and things like that. There were clearly things that did exist and others that were added afterwards. Now, there is an argument as to where these other customs came from. When a traditional Jew does these, he has other ways of thinking of these things, and is not thinking any Christological, Yeshua-centered way whatsoever. But when it's presented, and when a Messianic Jew presents it, does a Passover say to the Passover meal, again, exactly right. You're thinking, how could everybody not see this? It's so clear. It's so evident. So where did it come from? Yeah. There are Messianic Jews who believe that these Passover elements were added in by Jewish followers of Yeshua that somehow became mainstream through the whole community. Now, to a traditional Jew, that's crazy. That would be like saying, yeah, part of the New Testament was written by a Hindu, and that's how it got. I mean, that's how foreign it would sound to them. But
this had been around 135 AD before the Jews got kicked out of Jerusalem, or do you think it came afterward?
No, there were certainly growing traditions. I cannot pinpoint exactly when these things began. But there is debate among scholars as to all of the customs, where they came from. Some are still debated to this day. Messianic Jews have a theory. Otherwise, was it the Holy Spirit just bringing them in? That's another way to look at it. Now, here's the larger question, though. Where did some of the traditions come from in Jesus' day if they weren't in the Torah? We know there are many traditions. And Jesus certainly did not oppose all traditions by any means. Many would say he had a lot in common with the Pharisees. So, for example, he went to the synagogue. Who started that? That was a Pharisaical development, because the Pharisees did not put the same emphasis on the temple alone that the Sadducees did. Yeah. Right. So what they want, and it's good you're with me on all this. So for those that don't know them, that because Jews are scattered in different parts of the world, how can they live lives in a consecrated way? How can they be involved in the spiritual life of Israel without being at the temple, the synagogue system? So Jesus participated in that. When he rebuked the Pharisees for making the tassels of their garments long or showing off with their phylacteries, the tefillin, the prayer boxes, he obviously wasn't saying it was wrong to have the tassels, because that was in Torah. That was explicitly there, and from what we could tell, he wore them when some English translations talk about the fringe of his garment. Better to talk about the hem of his garment. It's better to be talking about the fringe, the ritual fringe that he would have worn. Did he put on the tefillin also, the phylacteries, the prayer boxes? Perhaps he did. Now, was that written explicitly in Torah? No, but Jewish tradition developed ideas of exactly the size. And there was a dispute about how many boxes would be within it, inside of each one, and other disputes within different groups. So in other words, there were developing traditions. So a traditional Jew would say, no, that goes all the way back to Moses on Mount Sinai. I say there's no evidence for that. However, there were many traditions that developed here. Every Christian follows some kind of tradition when they gather with other believers. And if they go to a church service and an order of service, or do they dress up or not dress up, or do you sing hymns, or do you do this, or do you preach, or do you have Bible studies? So there are all kinds of traditions. Some of them are neutral, some are good, some are bad. It was the bad ones that displaced the word of God. The bad ones, Matthew 15, Mark 7, Matthew 23, other passages, parts of Matthew 5, where Jewish tradition made void the word of God, or it turned Sabbath into something that God didn't intend it to. So those traditions are the one he exposed, but he certainly did not stand against all traditions, and those that were good or part of his life, he participated in.
But when Yeshua took the four cups like we do today, right?
Yes, there's evidence of that you can put together in the Gospels, yes.
Okay. All right, well, thank you, Dr. Brown. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you as a man of God, and I have much respect for you, sir.
Well, thank you, Brian. Much appreciated. Thank you so much. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, little trivia, all right? Matt, let's give away one of my Jewish debate videos. Which one? Which one should we give away? Just pick one for me, Matt, and put it on the screen here. Yes, I'm in Hungary, and Matt's in Charlotte, North Carolina, outside of Charlotte, and Joey and Betsy are in Winston-Salem. Then we've got folks in Dallas, and we are all over the place. But we'll pick one of our Jewish debates. I'm going to give this away. Are you ready? 866-34-TRUTH. Here's the trivia question. In what chapter of the Bible? Now, I'm going to give you choices. Don't panic. Okay. All right. So the famous Who Really Killed Jesus was standing room only at the Hilton Hotel, which is now 10 years ago. And there were significant results of people coming to faith, Jewish people coming to faith by God's grace as a result of that debate. Not because of my debating skills. I was up against a brilliant debater, but because of Yeshua being the Messiah. So my debate with Rabbi Shmuley. All right. You ready for the question? In what chapter of the New Testament did Paul tell Gentile believers they had a sacred responsibility to support Jewish believers in Israel? In what chapter of the New Testament did Paul tell Gentile believers that they had a sacred responsibility to support Jewish believers in Israel? Was it 1, Romans 15? 2, Galatians 4, 3, 1 Corinthians 16, 4, never. 866-34-TRUTH. Just call and take a stab. You won't have to come on the air. Betsy will answer your call, 866-348-7884, and I'll send you the free DVD of this debate, which you'll be enriched by. All right, so take a stab. And worst you could be is wrong. Was it 1, Romans 15, 2, Galatians 4, 3, 1 Corinthians 16, or 4, never? And first one to get it right. In fact, let me just type for Betsy here so she could tell you. All right, first one to get it right gets the free DVD. All right, I just posted the note for Betsy, and then I'll comment on that as soon as I have an opportunity. All right, some more news for you here. Oh, let me just find, there's so much that is going on. I've talked about the exploding violence and the the fears that there could be a third intifada. According to Haaretz report from 2 days ago, so Israeli newspaper, the Palestinians will submit a draft resolution calling for an end date for the Israeli occupation and for the recognition of a Palestinian state to the UN Security Council later this month, a senior Palestinian official told AFP on Tuesday. The main reason that we would say that will not happen is because of America's presence on the UN Security Council. If America was not there, you really do not know which way things could go and how strong is Israeli support right now. All right, Stacy. Stacy is our winner. Stacy's our winner. Stay right there, Stacy. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Get back! Get back! Do not come any closer!
Revolution! Revolution! Revolution!
Have you heard of the Million Mask March? Scheduled to take place in 463 locations around the world yesterday. I'm looking at this website, Million Mask March, largest world protest by the most influential group in the world. Remember the 5th of November. Anonymous is a truth movement advocating hacktivism as self-defense for unconstitutional government is our aim to shed light on corrupt government in order to set people free from oppression. Now being hailed as the most influential group in the world, Anonymous has caught the passionate attention of millions with our annual November 5th global event known as Million Mask March in commemoration of Guy Fawkes Day. We have for the last two consecutive years organized the largest world protest. Boy, yesterday came and went, and I didn't even know about that. What on the bottom, calling for the year of Jubilee? All right, we'll ignore that for right now. Okay, 866-34-TRUTH, any Jewish-related question you have. Hey, tell you what, come up with a really good Jewish or Hebrew question or Old Testament question, and just for a really good call, I'm going to give out a free DVD. I don't know if I've ever done that before. Just have a little fun today. If you come up with a really good question, you say, how will you know if it's really good? Well, give it a try. You know I'm a nice guy. 866-34-TRUTH. But while we're doing that, I've got another trivia question for you. And then I want to comment on the last one that I asked. Ready for this trivia question? Call in, take a stab. Get it wrong, you've lost nothing. You get it right, you get a free DVD of a classic debate with my dear friend Rabbi Shmuley and me, Who Really Killed Jesus, immediately before Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ movie. You talk about a major media event in Jewish ministry. That was it, hosted by Chosen People. All right, here's second trivia question. Who wrote that Jesus and Muhammad prepared the way for the coming of the Messiah? You say Jesus is the Messiah. Yeah, this is a Jewish writer who didn't believe that. So as much as this Jewish writer was critical of Jesus and critical of Muhammad and critical of Christianity and critical of Islam, he said that in a certain way, Jesus and Muhammad or Christianity and Islam prepared the way for the coming of the Messiah. Was it the great 20th century Jewish thinker Abraham Joshua Heschel? Was it the greatly hailed medieval Jewish and Talmudic commentator Rashi? So one, was it Heschel? Two, was it Rashi? Three, was it Maimonides, who lived in the 12th century and the great codifier and philosopher? Or four, David Ben-Gurion? Was it, hang on, I just typed the wrong name there, Betsy. Sorry, ignore that. I just typed the right name for you. Yikes, how did I do that? Okay, so which Jewish writer, thinker, influential, said that Christianity and Islam, as wrong as they were, prepared the way for the coming of the Messiah? Was it one, Abraham Joshua Heschel? And by the way, you don't have to be able to pronounce the names. Just say one, two, three, or four. Was it Abraham Joshua Heschel? Was it Rashi? Was it Maimonides? Was it David Ben-Gurion? 866-34-TRUTH. You get it right, you don't have to come on the air, okay? Just guess it right, and you get this free DVD. Okay, back to the previous point. It was Romans 15:27, where Paul, writing to Gentile believers in Rome, told them that they had a sacred responsibility. They had a sacred responsibility to support Jewish believers in Israel. All right? He said that they had a responsibility to do it. Why? Because they had been enriched spiritually by the Jewish people. And now it was right for them to stand with Jewish people, meaning Jewish believers in Israel in particular, financially. If they had been blessed spiritually, they should help others naturally. So Romans 15:20-something. Man, I think the jet lag is starting to click in. I talked about a philosophizer. Was that it? And now 20-something. You got to be kidding me. All right. Yeah, well, listen, I was, while you were sleeping in your comfortable beds, I was flying. All right. So anyway, I want to ask you if you support Jewish ministry, if you support Jewish believers in Israel, if you sow into reaching the lost sheep of the house of Israel with the gospel, if you help needy believers in Israel, say no, you ought to. Church ought to. You ought to prioritize as you give to missions, to prioritize first fruits what you give to missions to give to Jewish outreach. It's not because this is some notch in our belt. We want another Jew. And, of course, Jewish people would be upset with me saying this, like, leave us alone. Leave us alone with your proselytizing. However, we believe to the core of our being, whatever the cost or consequence, that we've got to share the good news with everyone, to the Jew first and also to the Gentile. And obviously, a traditional Jew would say, we don't need saving and we don't need your Jesus above all. And I'd say he is the Messiah. He is the only one. He is the way that we truly come to know God and worship him rightly. And outside of his mercy, we are lost. Hey, Joey, check this out. We do not have a winner. Yeah, I would have announced it. 866-34-TRUTH. Call and take a stab. All right, worst you can be is wrong. Which Jewish writer said that both Christianity and Islam, Jesus and Muhammad, despite criticizing them and the Christian and the Islamic religion, that they both prepared the way for the coming of the Messiah? Was it the great 20th century Jewish thinker, Abraham Joshua Heschel? Was it the great Jewish biblical and Talmudic commentator, Rashi, who lived in the 11th century? Was it the great law codifier and philosopher Moses Maimonides, who lived in the 12th century? Or was it 20th century Israeli leader David Ben-Gurion? One Heschel, two Rashi, three Maimonides, four David Ben-Gurion. First one who guesses right gets a free copy of my DVD debate with Rabbi Shmuley, Who Really Killed Jesus. We come back. I want to open up the scriptures in Hebrew to you. And as I've been working on a regular basis on my commentary in the book of Job, I want to share some thoughts with you. If you haven't yet read my latest article entitled Bill Maher and Free Speech at Berkeley, why does he cross the line? Why does Bill Maher cross a line when he bashes Islam? And there's a protest about him doing the commencement speech at Berkeley, but when he bashes Christianity, you think these Berkeley students are going to bat an eyelash? I don't. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the line of fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, I am going to make this even easier. Betsy, do you happen to remember what answer, the wrong answer? Okay, all right, so tell you what, I'm going to make this really easy, okay? I'm going to eliminate one of the choices. 866-34-TRUTH, first one to call in, get it right. You can search on internet or just take a guess. You get a 1 in 3 chance of getting a free DVD, all right? Free DVD of my debate with Rabbi Shmuley, Who Really Killed Jesus. I was speaking to a major sports executive last year, a Jewish man, major sports executive. Of course, that could be any of many, many people, right? And he told me that he had started going to a Messianic congregation. He had started going to meetings, but he had lots of questions and doubts about Yeshua being our Messiah. And he came to that debate in New York City, Who Really Killed Jesus? And that's the night that it was settled in his heart and the doubts went away. That's the grace of God. That's the kind of fruit we've seen coming from debates. Oh, there are other testimonies as well, but that's one I just heard last year that was wonderful to hear. All right, you got a 1 in 3 choice now, because I'm actually eliminating what our last caller gave a wrong answer. So you're not going to come on the air. You don't have to worry about being embarrassed with a wrong answer, okay? And how would most people know the answer to this anyway? Nothing to be embarrassed about. You could ask me a million questions I don't have any answers to, all right? So, which famous Jewish writer said that both Jesus and Muhammad, Christianity and Islam, as much as they did evil and harm, okay, this is his view, in a unique way, they prepared the way for the coming of the Messiah? Was it 1, Abraham Joshua Heschel, 2, Rashi, 3, Moses Maimonides? And if you can't pronounce them, just give it a stab, 1, 2, or 3. Who was it who said it? And if we don't get a right answer, I'm going to give the answer. Nah, I'm not going to post it. But that's a nice thought, Matt. Maybe the next trivia one. If I don't get the right answer in the next 2 minutes, I'm going to give the answer to this one, and then I'm going to post another question. 866-348-7884. Book of Job. I'm living in the Book of Job, writing my commentary on it with an emphasis on the theological truths and, of course, the issue of the problem of suffering. And when I was going through the 16th chapter, there's something really fascinating in the 16th chapter. In the midst of Job's agony, he talks about how God has assaulted him. He thinks what Satan has done to him was a direct assault from God. Of course, God allowed it. There are all kinds of mysteries and questions with that. But he's in great agony. He talks about God assaulting him as if it's a violent attack. Betsy, we still don't have it. Nobody got it right yet. All right. Still don't have it. Who was the other choice? All right, but they're guessing wrong. Should I give it away even more? All right. okay. I'm going to make, hey, it's down to 2 now. It wasn't Heschel either. It's either Rashi or Maimonides. Either number 2 or number 3. Either Rashi or Maimonides. 866-34-TRUTH. Oh, somebody's got to get it now. But in Job, the 13th chapter, he says all this has happened to him. And then, Aloha mas b'chapi, Tfilatizaka, Job 16:17. He says, all this has happened, even though there was no violence in my hands and my prayer was pure. Those words, Aloha mas, even though there was no violence, is probably a borrowing of thought from Isaiah 53. The suffering servant who suffers unjustly, all these things come on him, even though he didn't deserve it.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, that was fun. We got to keep Betsy on her toes through the break, as many of you called in, because the caller winner, Bobby from Charlotte, who guessed right, Maimonides. Come on, we boiled it down. We gave you 1 in 4 choice, then 1 in 3 choice, then 1 in 2 choice. So congratulations, Bobby. Moses Maimonides lived 1135 to 1204 in the philosophical world, most famous for his Guide for the Perplexed in the world of Jewish tradition and law, most known for his Mishneh Torah, also called the Yad because it was in 14 volumes, and that's the numeric value for Yad, Yad HaChazakah, or Yad HaChazakah, the strong hand. That's how God's hand in Exodus is referenced, the strong hand, mighty arm that he used to save Israel. And anyway, it's more information than you probably needed. But Maimonides codified Jewish law. Maimonides took all of the various traditions that were existing in many, many different sources and put them together in a systematic law code that is still used and studied by Jews widely to this day. And Maimonides also laid out a system of 13 points of essential belief for Jews. And there was controversy around that. Now it's much more widely accepted over the centuries has been than it was when it first came out. However, he said that Christianity and Islam were terribly destructive. Obviously, he had negative views on both, but he felt that they each prepared the way for the world believing in one God and for the idea of a Messiah. And now, in his view, Christianity and Islam are false, but they're a step from some of the idolatry that exists in other parts of the world. So through Christianity and Islam. And remember, he certainly didn't see the best of Christianity in certain ways. He was exposed to different things. Maybe it was mixed, okay? But in other ways, he didn't see the best. And whatever Islam he was exposed to living in Egypt, and he would have been exposed to Coptic Christianity in Egypt, and depending on his other knowledge and travels, Catholic Christianity in other parts of the world. In any case, he did recognize that they were going in a certain direction. Now, sadly, he didn't understand who Jesus was. Sadly, he didn't recognize it, that he is and was the Messiah. Did not recognize that. 866-34-TRUTH. Going to go to the phones in a moment as I come your way live from Hungary. And please pray this weekend. I'll have the privilege of speaking to tens of thousands of people face-to-face. And then by television, whatever is broadcast from the church nationwide. Nationwide, widely watched television. Because it's not a religious station, it's a secular station that's owned by this massive church, faith church here in Hungary. And I'll certainly be speaking on Israel, God's purposes, God's heart. This is something deep in the church, but hopefully I can bring something from my own perspective in life that will serve and minister to them. We've talked about cultural issues and the ongoing pressure on Hungary to change its views on sexual morality and marriage. So I believe I'll be speaking on that, on cultural issues and homosexuality. Here in Hungary, in fact, I learned something, having an early meal a little bit before. I learned something that I never knew, but George Soros, the billionaire, very, very liberal, leftist, tremendous supporter of causes that we deeply differ with, a strong pro-abortion supporter, strong gay activist supporter, that his money is active here in Hungary. No surprise, zero surprise to hear that, but I didn't know that his family is Hungarian, that he's of Hungarian origin, and that he helped fight against communism decades past. Now he's on the wrong side of these issues. But in Job chapter 16, Job then cries out, Eretz al tichasi dami, O earth, do not cover up my blood. And let there be no resting place for my cry. And then he says, Gamata hineva shamayim ad, for even now in heaven is my witness. Vasahadi bamromim, and the one who testifies on my behalf is on high. He's in heaven. He's on high. Who is that? Who is that? There's great debate. The traditional view is he's speaking about God, but no, he just said God assaulted him. Well, the traditional view is, held to by both Jews and Christians, that he runs from God to God. He believes God is the one who's attacked him without cause, but yet he believes that there's justice in God and God will testify on his behalf. I have a problem with that, because it says that this witness in heaven, verse 21, V'yochach legever im Eloha, that he will argue the case as with a man, with God, uven adam l'rehu, and is between a human and his friend. This is a mediator. Well, some have said, well, it's his own cry, his own righteousness that mediates. That even though the great scholars who hold to that, two tremendous scholars recently who hold to that, I cannot see that working for quite a number of reasons. So is it Jesus? Well, I don't believe that Job consciously understood the gospel in that respect, that Job consciously understood that there was a heavenly mediator, the Son, who would come to earth and die for our sins and mediate between man and God, as both man and God. No, I don't believe that. But I do believe that he had hope and somehow a firm conviction that there was a mediator, that there had to be justice in God's universe. And he certainly would have believed in a heavenly council. He certainly would have believed in other divine beings under God himself, angelic beings, whoever. Job 33, the words of Elihu seem to speak to this as well. So I believe that he did have a hope that there was a heavenly mediator based on Job, the 16th chapter. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. And let's go to Daniel in Raleigh, North Carolina. Okay, you are trying to win a free DVD with my offer of the DVD for a good Jewish or Old Testament question. So go for it. I'm sure it'll be a good one. Go ahead.
Okay, you ready?
I am ready, man.
Okay. All right. Well, here's my question. It's a tough question I've been dealing with throughout my faith. We're taught, regardless of our doctrine, that God knows the future, that God is all-knowing. He's all-present. He's all-knowing. You know, he's everything. He knows the future. But in the story of Job, it doesn't appear that he knows the outcome. Why would Satan take a bet with a guy who knows the future? And Satan was in heaven with God before he was thrown out, so he knows God's characteristics. And it would seem that the two of them just waited out to see how this is going to play out. God is confident in his servant Job, but he doesn't seem to know the ending until it happens.
All right. Why do you say, I like the question, so you'll get your DVD. Why does, in your view, God not know the outcome? What in the text gives any indication that God does not know the outcome before he starts the whole process?
Well, it's not that the text declares it. It's just that throughout the Bible, God seems to be doing things according to, he seems reactionary. He seems reactive, not proactive, in certain cases. He sends them a prophet, they don't listen. He sends them another prophet, they don't listen. He sends them another prophet, they don't listen. He sends them his son.
All right, so here's the question then. If he said, well, you're never going to listen, I'm never going to send you a single prophet, then we could rightly say, well, you didn't warn us. You didn't give us an opportunity. I remember as a new believer really wrestling with this, Daniel, and asking myself the question, if I tell the Lord, if you'll help me in this way, then I will do this. You know, Jacob in Genesis 28, if you do this and this and this, then I'll surely give you the tenth, right? Well, what if God knew that I wouldn't do it if he came through? He did what I asked him, and I said, if you do this, I'll do this. But he knows that I won't. I concluded that he would do it anyway because he is going to be proved righteous, and there still has to be accountability. If you have a child and you know the child is not going to respond properly to something, you still give that child the opportunity. Now it is demonstrated to both you and that child. So God knows everything before it happens, yes, but he also knows everything before it happens based on seeing how we will respond. In other words, he inhabits eternity, Isaiah 57:15, because he inhabits eternity. The future to him is like the past to us, but the past happened based on real life decisions people made. The future happens based on real life decisions people made. When it comes to Job, God had many, many goals. One goal was to demonstrate something before the heavenly council, before the entire spiritual universe. Another purpose was to do something extraordinary and profound in Job. And another purpose was to give something to the entire body about the issue of suffering and some of the mystery of it. As to why Satan would challenge God, he was challenging Job. He believed that he had the right view of Job. And remember, if he went to rebel in the first place, Daniel, if he went to rebel in the first place, he's not thinking rightly. He's not thinking clearly. So Satan, being Satan, is going to challenge God until his last moment of activity. Anyway, Daniel, stay there. I want to send you this free DVD gift.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Line of Fire, coming your way live from Hungary, my first trip ever in Hungary. And 3 hours after arriving at the airport, we are broadcasting live. Now we're ending up our fifth hour in Hungary. So 2 hours we spent on the radio with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's just go through these and I'll go to the phones. Pull up 3 through 5, Joey. This is Euro Mideast News on YouTube, and it is reporting on the conflict in the Temple Mount and the attack on right-wing Rabbi Yehuda Glick, the assassination attempt. Things really are getting out of hand right now. And it's not just Hamas, the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, they're helping to inflame the situation. Clip number 3.
At the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, a highly anticipated hearing on the issue of Jewish prayer at the Temple Mount quickly turns into a heated argument. The issue has gone from only being the obsession of a few fringe elements to becoming a topic of public debate.
Yeah, I'm looking at timesofisrael.com published this Arabic cartoon. This is Palestinian Authority security. They posted a cartoon of Israel raping the Temple Mount. Yeah, Israel raping the Temple Mount. Israel has had to take extra security measures because of the attack, the assassination attack on this right-wing rabbi. That's what Israel's had to do. So here in this graphic, you've got a woman, a Muslim woman. She is crying. She's behind bars. And the Temple Mount is on her head. So this is the... This is the Dome of the Rock. This is this is who she is, and the Israeli totally caricatured face, and he's dropping his pants. It's from the back, and he's about to rape the Temple Mount. Oh gosh, I mean this is some of what people are being exposed to. All right, clip number 4.
We have a lot of political will. We're lacking political guts, which means most of the Jewish politicians in this Knesset support our call. They're only afraid.
I can't tell you how volatile this is because of the amount of tension that goes on around Temple Mount. You have the Kotel, what Christians call the Wailing Wall, and traditional Jews is called the Wall. The Western Wall. So this is a place, a sacred place for prayer for Jewish people, for large numbers of traditional Jews and for tourists who come from around the world. And then you have the sacred places to Islam, and it's kind of like the pinnacle of the place of spiritual conflict. Boom, right there. And these things can explode sometimes at any moment. All right, I've got time for another call. Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona. Bob, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I just really appreciate your ministry. Got a question. talking about Romans 15 that we are to give to, you know, the Jews in Israel, in light of that, is there any biblical precedent that we are to first give our tithes to the church, then to Israel? You know, I've heard many pastors say, well, before you give anywhere else, first give to the church, then you can give somewhere else.
Yeah, well, I think the clear principle from Scripture is that the first fruits of our income is given to God's work. I cannot make a New Testament case that tithing is obligatory. I've always tithed and practiced that or above, and I feel it's an excellent practice. I encourage it, but it is not a New Testament mandate. What is a mandate is to give first to the Lord, to give generously, and to give in proportion to income unless we're giving sacrificially. That's clear. Now, ideally, Bob, every local assembly will be giving to help in Jewish outreach, will be giving to help in world missions, will be giving to help the poor, will be giving to help the needy in Israel. Is that the case? No. And in fact, only a few pennies of every dollar that most Christians give ends up going to world missions or to reach the unreached and things like that. So we need to do a better job in that respect. But ideally, we should be giving to a congregation, trusting our leadership to do something with the first fruits of our gifts to meet the needs of that body, to support the leaders who are serving the body, and to have for the poor, for world missions, and for Israel. If that's not the case, I would always still give of the first fruits to the local assembly that I'm part of because that assembly is serving me, but I would make sure that I am also giving to help in world missions, Jewish outreach, and to help the lost sheep of the house of Israel hear the gospel, because Paul did say the gospel is first to the Jew and then to the Gentile. The church, though, that has modeled this in a supernatural way is Gateway Truth.
Yeah.
And Gateway Church, in Grapevine, Dallas, Texas, is one of the fastest growing churches in the country. I think membership is well over 30,000 now. They're 14 years old. But from the very beginning, when they began to give, and they've never collected an offering in the history of the church, but they are far and away from mega churches the most giving church in the nation, the highest per capita rate of giving, and they don't pass a bucket, they don't take an offering, they just have boxes in the back. But it's been their custom, Bob, that the first fruits of what they get, used to be 10%, now it's 15% of all income that comes in, they put aside for missions. And the first tenth of that, so the first check they write is to support believers in Israel and Jewish evangelism, and they believe it's why God has so supernaturally blessed them. So I can't tell you, you know, where to give first in that respect. That's between you and God. But if your church is not doing that, then by all means, give to those who are reaching the Jewish people with the gospel and give to help needy believers in Israel. My friend together, Scott Volk with togetherforisrael.com, he's actively involved in supporting the poor and the needy in Israel and also helping needy Arabs as well. And then, of course, our ministry is on the front lines of Jewish outreach. There are many places you can give. But if your church doesn't have a vision for it, give to your church, but then make sure you're also giving to help in these ways as well. Hey, Bob, I've got to run, but the heart's the biggest thing. If you go to the Lord, I trust He will bless you and guide you in the process. Hey, Betsy, in answer to your question, nah, that's all right. The gift offer still stands. That's just fine. Friends, remember to go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Check out the latest article about Bill Maher, free speech at Berkeley. Why is Christian bashing okay, but not Muslim bashing? Check that out and stand with us. Support us as we are on the front lines making a difference. My bottom line today, as I prepare to minister for the first time in Hungary, it's amazing to see that one of the nation's leading churches has always stood with Israel. Came to